Blog Talk Radio.
They did not announce officially that it had been a break, but you could definitely tell that there was an injury to that hand. But besides that, Andre Ward is an exceptional fighter. He's actually one of my favorites in the sport today. We were talking about it a few weeks ago. What makes him so good is the fact that he's versatile. You know, he knows when to box, he knows when to, you know, put the pressure on. I mean, he's not a tremendous puncher, but he's a very much a thinking man fighter, and that's you know what he did against Carl Frotch. I had predicted a Ward victory. I knew it wasn't going to be easy. I said the only question mark would be if he got stunned. I wanted to say hurt, but not broken hand type hurt. When I mean hurt, I mean like stunned, fatigued, tired, you know, maybe, you know, hit with a couple good shots and his bell rung a little bit. I wanted to see how he'd react to that. But he never gave Frotch that opportunity, the game plan, and he executed it. I mean, there's very few negative things you can say about a guy like Andre Ward, both as a fighter and as a person. I mean, he's one of my personal favorites, and I think he's a great role model to boot.
Well, we're also going to be having a guest on tonight, Steve Barhood from Showtime, and he's going to talk about a couple other members of the Super Six Classic there.
Great.
Who are fighting tomorrow night, for those of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Andre Durrell and Jermaine Taylor. It's going to be a good opportunity to talk to a guy like Steve Barhood. I've been actually reading a lot of Steve's work for years. You know, his contributions to KO Magazine, Ring Magazine, also following, you know, commentary on Showtime. Very knowledgeable person about boxing. You know, my favorite kind of people to talk to.
And, I mean, we do have some other boxing news, but we're going to try to finish the show a little bit early as far as our commentary and play a lot of the conference call they had the other day. It was my first boxing conference call in as long as I can remember. The last conference call I even did was for the UFC. It was only because of the folks at Showtime and their partnership with Strikeforce. they ended up sending me the information, whereas the UFC people probably know who I am and wouldn't send it to me. And I didn't get to ask a question on any of those conference calls for the UFC that I got on, and then they stopped sending me the information, so somebody got the memo, I guess. Don't send Rich the information. But I got on the conference call, and surprisingly enough, I was pretty early in the queue to ask a question. And I got Andre Drew, and the first question I asked him was, what's your ultimate goal in the sport? And he answered that pretty well, explaining he wants to be up there with Pacquiao, Cyril Mayweather, and, you know, obviously get a belt, like most of the people who answer that question say. And I also asked him what he loves most about boxing. So we'll play that part, the whole conference call later, and I'm going to actually make it available on the website for our subscription people so that we can milk some money out of it.
I remember we were having some problems recently. We were talking about being able to post cards in the floor and this and that. Now our shows, we're still live, but are they still being archived if someone can do this and down the road?
Yeah, the only thing that happened was that the podcast taken offline. So we actually still have somewhere all those recordings that I could place on another website eventually. It's a lot of work. Most of the stuff that we have is still...
A few weeks ago, I was able to share the link to our October 7th, I think it was, show, and send it to Brittany Rogers, who has promoted that show in September that I went to. Because she was in Vegas at the time, didn't get a chance, or in Chicago at the time, didn't get a chance to hear it live. So I sent her the link to it, and she loved it.
Cool. Yeah, we try. We try to please.
We do. We try.
We've gotten a ton of good guests recently, and I actually wasn't even planning on having a guest at all, and I guess I kind of sent a follow-up email to the folks over at Showtime who sent me the information on the conference call. And when they did the highlights of the conference call, they included both my questions to Andre Durrell. So I was kind of encouraged by that. And the folks over there sent me an email right back later that night saying, well, Steve Farhood's available if you want to talk to him. Because I mentioned that I'd love to get Andre or Jermaine or both of them on the show sometime. So... have anything to say about that, but he said Steve Farhood's good to go, so he set that up very quickly, and so I kind of couldn't slack off this week. They wouldn't let me. they set me up with a good interview, so we got that done. And Jermaine Taylor is obviously coming off a long layoff, and so is Durrell, so it's kind of surprising that they decided to go up against the guys that have such good records. Their first fights back against both of them. So it was sort of interesting. Later on, after I got to ask a couple questions of Durrell, they put Jermaine on the line, and I asked Jermaine and Lou DiBella both a question about the old boxing is dying mantra that all these people keep trying to say out there, and what they could individually do to change that perception. And it was kind of interesting that Jermaine said everybody loves a comeback, and that's one of the aspects of this card that he thinks people will like, is that it's representing his the refusal to give up on the sport and come back to it and see what happens. And he sounds like he's definitely not really affected by the long time out of the sport. Brain-wise, he's been left and right and cleared to go, so he's ready and willing and able, and we'll see what happens. He's fighting a real tough guy, though. So we get the official matchups here in a second. I think it's one of the best showbox cards we'll see in a long time. It's a great fight to end the year for them. Jermain is fighting a guy named Jesse Nicklo, who's 22-2-3 with 8 knockouts from Baltimore, Maryland. He's not a world champion or anything, but a tough kid for what some might call a tune-up fight for him. Against a guy who doesn't have a tune-up fight record.
And there is the issue. I mean, obviously, you know, we really love, you know, who this kid fought, you know, against who he lost against. I mean, sometimes you get guys that they play almost like that Midwest circuit, that like Indiana and like all those areas, where you can really tag the record up pretty quickly. I remember going down to a fight card back in 1999 down in Atlantic City, and Hector Camacho Jr. was on it, so of course I'm rooting against him. And he's fighting this kid by the name of Mike the Hammer something or other. And I don't remember his name. Mike the Hammer, Mike the Hammer Cooley. And he came in with an over 500 record. He was like, say, like something like 21-10 or something. And Camacho just absolutely obliterated him. And it's like, well, it's sad to say, like, there were 20 guys this guy beat. But then you go on, like, to play the box track, and you look at his record, and he was fighting guys that were, like, fighting guys, like, Ellen Sick. And he might fight the same guy, like, 3 times. And so, like, a lot of them, you see a record, a lot of it depends on, you know, where this record has been built from. With that being said, that guy named Jermaine Taylor stepped in the ring in a competitive nature in several years, and his last few fights have not ended in a good way. You figure since 2007, he had the 2 wins over Bernard Hopkins, both of them very controversial. I thought Hopkins won the first fight, and I thought the second fight was a draw. But Taylor got the win in both of them. Then you have I remember a fight against Corey Spinks that was just absolutely dreadful. Then you have the 2 fights with Kelly Pavlik, a knockout loss and a decision loss. And then we had the stoppage loss to Carl Frosch, where he had Frosch on the canvas. Did not follow up on it. Got stopped in the 12th round. And then he had that devastating loss to Arthur Abraham, where he was knocked out cold. I mean, he was flat on his back, down cold. This is the guy that, you know, it's scary. Now, we had a guy on the show a few weeks ago, Roy Jones Jr., who has, you know, been knocked out several times in very scary fashion. But when we had him on the show, he showed literally no ill effects in that. You know, his voice was clear. His memory was good. I mean, I was asking him about stuff from the 88 Olympics and stuff from his pro career, and he was sharp as can be.
Yeah. He remembered his very first fight ever.
Exactly. Then 2 weeks later, we had Riddick Bowe on the phone, and Riddick Bowe, who only had 1 defeat in his entire career, which was a decision loss, he had... he's only been knocked down in his career. I only knocked down, I think, once against Holyfield in their third fight. And I think Galata knocked him down 2 times in their second fight. But he took pounding for both Galata fights. And when you talk to him, he was hard to understand. I mean, his voice, he was slurring. His voice was not clear. And you would have said, he was the guy that was knocked out several times and took a lot of tremendous beating, not Roy Jones. So a lot of it depends on the individual. I read Ring Magazine a lot. Dr. Margaret Goodman, who was a Las Vegas-based physician, is a ringside physician in a lot of prominent fights. She wrote a couple of articles that I read about different fighters and their reactions to concussions, head injuries, and pugilistic dementia.
Yeah, it's definitely a story that I've been following, too. I just wrote another article about a bunch of new NFL lawsuits regarding concussion issues. And it seems like the NFL is taking it really seriously this year, whether it's because of these streams of litigation are because they really care. I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of both. But they're taking all these new steps. They get trainers now, certified athletic trainers up in the booth to review certain plays and make sure that, if there's a possible concussion, it's addressed right away. And there's just all these lawsuits from these guys. One of the most interesting ones I read about this week was the NFL was allegedly shooting guys up, whether they had it or not, with this painkiller. And it's like an over-the-counter Advil type of painkiller, but it's injected. So whether you have an injury or not, it makes you feel good. And if you do have an injury, it kind of blunts the effects of it. So if you go into a football game before you go out there, you're having a concussion, you take this drug, you don't feel it, you go out there and you're damaging yourself more by clashing with other guys. So it was kind of interesting to read about that sort of stuff. I'm sure that there's a lot of crossover with boxing. Getting back to this card tomorrow night, it's going to be from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa in Moslem, California. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Anyway, Andre Durrell is going to be fighting a guy named Daryl Cunningham. He's 24-2, 10 knockout from Detroit, and he's had 17 consecutive victories. Hasn't lost since December 2007. So the two guys that these former Super 6 guys are facing, I think Cunningham is the tougher of the two, with only two losses. But I think both of these guys are going to win Durrell and Taylor, hands down. They're just too good for their opponents. But we'll see. You know, anything can happen. And the third fight is actually really good, too, because it's two undefeated guys. It's a light heavyweight fight between Luis El Leon Garcia, who's 11-0 with 9 knockouts. And believe it or not, he's from Cork, Ireland. You don't hear that much. Guy named Garcia from Ireland. And he's going to fight southpaw Alexander the Great Johnson, who's 12-0 with 5 knockouts and 1 no contest. He's from Maryland. That's going to be an 8-rounder. But we have other news, too. I don't want to shortchange that since we're going to have a short show here. We're going to start the conference call recording about 10 minutes into the second hour, and then we're going to have, before that, we're going to have Steve Forhood on at around 8:30. So we had a lot of news to blow through. And, we've been talking about boxing for a while here. I definitely wanted to mention this big story to you because I know it will infuriate you. Snooki is getting into the boxing game as a promoter. Can you believe it? Snooki is starting Team Snooki Boxing. Their first event is going to be in Atlantic City, and speaking of Ireland, it's going to be three Irish brothers, the Highland Brothers, who I actually saw fight in person in my hometown of Doorness, the fight I went to there a while ago. Patrick, Eddie, and Paul Highland are the brothers, and Snooki is going to be putting on this card in Atlantic City on January 28th at the Resorts Casino Hotel. And apparently, I don't know what got her interested in the sport, but one of these articles I read about it says Don King's going to have some competition for the worst hair in boxing. It's going to be called the Irish Invasion, which is more puzzling because Snooki is all about, the Italians. The Jersey Italians, even though she's like from Guatemala or something. I'm not sure exactly what country.
She's not even
Italian. She's adopted. I forget which one, but it's a South American one. I know that for sure. So she doesn't have any connection at all to Irish people. But she's doing this thing in Atlantic City. The only boxing experience she really has is when she gets punched in the face at a bar by a guy. boxing. But I just thought that was an interesting story, unexpected. I guess the popularity issue is big thing because Snooki is, lover or hater, very popular in that that age group of young adolescents and 20-somethings out there. So maybe the fact that she's getting into boxing and if she sticks with it, that will bring a lot more of those people in with her. Her card featured on one of the Jersey Shore shows. But anyway, very interesting. We'll see what happens with that. We do have UFC 141 coming up. I'm going to go through that card in a minute, but I just wanted a couple, wanted to mention a couple quick UFC stories. Miguel Torres, we talked about our last show, got thrown out of the UFC for a tweet about a rape van. And apparently, he's back now. Let him back. He did apologize profusely. He actually had to do some community service type work at the rape center because of the issue. And Dana White accepted it back. And I haven't been able to get to the article because the site is down. But on the story about him being brought back into the fold, there is a link to apparently a tweet by Dana White that mentioned rape. So that might have something to do with why Torres is back. So Dana White throws out a guy for making comments similar to what he made in the past, actually. That was kind of crazy. But it makes sense. He must have got called out on it. Somebody picked up on it and pointed it out to him. He said, wow, geez, you know, I can't punish the guy for making the same mistake I did. So brought him back in. And we'll see how that goes. But another Strikeforce heavyweight's also in the news. The article will come up here. Undefeated heavyweights in Strikeforce. They've actually decided next year, 2012, they're going to fold the Strikeforce heavyweight division into the UFC. Even though they made a deal with Showtime to extend the coverage for another full year. After the heavyweight tournament is over, they're going. They're going to basically eliminate the Strikeforce heavyweight division and bring all those guys that they feel have any worth to the UFC. And the latest guy is Shane Del Rosario. He has a perfect 11-0 record, and he's one of the top prospects in the division. And already, they've before they even officially dissolved the heavyweight division Strikeforce, they've already brought over Fabricum and Chad Griggs. It's kind of interesting to me that they're not going to destroy Strikeforce. It's business as usual. You know, all the stuff about what they're going to do, and they seem to be on the other side of things, taking these steps to dismantle it piece by piece and pretend like nobody's going to notice. you know, not going to affect the bottom line, which I think eventually it would have to. Whether they intend to kill it or not, it's going to not be alive. So we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I think it seems like it's a big-time ploy to make it look on the exterior like they're protecting this brand when they're really just kind of selling it piecemeal back to the UFC. Not even selling it, giving it away. Anyway, the UFC has a big event coming up tomorrow night. It's going to compete with the Showbox card. And it's UFC 141, Brock Lesnar versus Alistair Overeem. Is another example of a Strikeforce heavyweight coming over the back out of the heavyweight tournament in Strikeforce. There was some controversy, and then the UFC suddenly just picked them up, signed them. The only controversy since then, I guess, has been the steroid testing that they wanted over him to take. And his mother was sick over in Holland, so it was delayed. They finally did it. He came up clean. And now he's going to be fighting this Friday night against Brock Lesnar, who's 5-2. Apparently he's much improved since he was out so long with his diverticulitis injury there. He's been working a lot on his striking because because Overeem is a K-1 champion. He's fought a lot of tough guys, done a lot of striking on the feet, and it's going to be an interesting fight. If Brock decides that he can hang with him on the feet, I think it'll be a real brawl. It might go a couple rounds, but it's going to be bloody either way.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Hey,
they
nothing
need
wrong with it again.
After the last one on Fox was kind of a bust, it was over in less than a minute. I think they really need a fight like that to show people that the heavyweight division is just as exciting as any other division, especially with guys like John Jones out there at light heavyweight fighting like he does, and always crowd pleasing. But Lesnar and Overeem is probably one of the hardest fights to predict, because I would like to pick Overeem in my head, just based on his time in the sport, his basically who's who of opponents, fought all over the world. But then again, my gut tells me Brock Lesnar has a better chance than the UFC guy. He's basically the face of the heavyweight division in the UFC, even though he's not the champion right now. He has probably the top high ever in the sport, period. Never mind what league. He's been paid a ton of money to get in there. And he knows, he only has so much time to learn, because he's kind of been put under the gun. He was a champion wrestler, of course, in college, and that's what got him into professional wrestling, which wasn't real, but it still requires a lot of physical. The bottom line is he is the UFC's guy, and he knows he has to represent that. So I think he has worked really hard. He's had a lot of time off to adjust his game and figure out what went wrong. Big loss against Velasquez, and obviously striking lost that fight for him, so he's definitely had to take some steps to address that. But at the end of the day, I really think Overeem has changed this one because he's the fresher fighter. We saw what happened with Cain Velasquez in the last fight. He had that long layoff, and Junior Dos Santos came in there and annihilated him. Here's Brock Lesnar, supposedly as healthy as ever, but he had a long layoff. Nine times out of ten, when guys come in rusty, it shows. Overeem has fought way more guys, been way more tough experiences in the cage, and I think he's going to take it. But I'm not sure how it ends. I don't want to say knockout, but anything can happen in this kind of fight.
I'm not sure the distance, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I don't know the sport as well as you do, or as well as some of our listeners do. But when you get a guy like Brock Lesnar in there, he's a big, powerful guy. His fights generally are not going to go to Lesnar. He's very aggressive. He's going to take advantage to hammer you. He's just immensely powerful. And now he's taking on the guy his own size.
Yeah, and it's going to be exciting. I mean, I think they were smart to bring Alistair Overeem into the UFC. He's probably more popular overseas than he is in the United States, but he's just really been all over the world fighting, from Japan to California, just everywhere. I think that's going to show in this fight. And just the time off for Lesnar is just going to be way too much for him to adjust. I mean, training is training. You can train with anybody, but that real live action, there's no way that you can duplicate that in training sessions. So I really think Alistair is going to win, but my gut tells me Brock has a better chance than I've given. Because if anybody knows how to work out and train and get ready for a fight like this, it's him. He apparently has got all the right people saying all the right things about how hard he's working. The sparring partners have spoken up about how much of an improvement he's seen since he got back from the diverticulitis problem there. But we do have a whole bunch of other fights I want to run through real quick here before we get to you on the phone. Nate Diaz, the younger brother of the always controversial Nick Diaz, will be fighting Donald Cerrone. I think he was a former guest on our show not too long ago, if I remember correctly. I might be thinking of somebody else, but Donald Cerrone came over from the WEC, and Nate Diaz is coming off a loss, so it's going to be a statement fight for him. He fights a little bit similar to his brother, but he's not as dynamic. He tends to grapple and go for the submission more than standing up like his brother does. Another fight, John Fitch versus Johnny Hendricks. And Fitch is talking about wanting a title opportunity if he gets through Hendricks in this fight. And probably deserves it at this point. That's weird because like, I just checked the interface a couple minutes ago and it showed we were on, so it must have just happened quickly without me knowing.
Okay.
It's probably wasn't for a while, I don't think. I guess we'll find out after the show is recorded. But anyway, let's get Steve on. Showtime, Showbox analyst.
Hello.
Hello, Steve.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and you're also online with Tony the Tornado Pettacow, Vikings Unlimited. How's it going?
What's up,
Steve? Good.
Okay. Yeah, all set to go.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about what's got you excited about tomorrow night's card on Showbox.
Well, it's certainly a very different card for Showbox. Usually we're about prospects, up-and-coming prospects, and these are certainly not prospects that we're featuring tomorrow. Although in our first fight tonight, we have a Cuban guy, Luis Garcia, a light heavyweight, who I think does fit the Showbox mold. But in terms of Andre Durrell and Jermaine Taylor, obviously they're not prospects. It's very much the exact opposite. They're veterans who have to show that they still have it, and they're coming back under very different circumstances with Andre, coming off the best fight of his life against Andre Abraham, and Jermaine coming off a knockout loss to Andre Abraham. So a lot for both of them to prove tomorrow night.
Right.
Steve, Rich and I were discussing, when we first got on the air tonight, our deal with two guys that maybe are in a little bit different directions, veterans that are back out there to prove themselves. And Jermaine Taylor, I was speaking about extensively because I followed his career when he since he come out of the Olympics. And one thing that worried me is his two fights with Bernard Hopkins, they were both very close, very competitive. And I think in that first fight with Hopkins, when he got stunned for the first time in his career, it almost like put him into a shell. I remember his fight with Corey Spinks, who's not rightly known as a puncher, and Taylor fought very defensively in that fight. Then you have the two fights with Kelly Pavlik, especially that knockout loss in there. And after that, you could almost tell he fought Carl Froch. He had Froch down. He had him hurt, and he just would not press the issue anymore, and ended up in a stoppage loss, and then a very brutal stoppage with Arthur Anderson. I mean, is this a time when is it wise for him to come back?
Well, obviously that's the question: is it wise for him to come back? And his fighting style aside, I think what you have to ask, the question you have to ask is, what's going to happen? And we probably won't see this tomorrow night because of the level of the opposition, but what's going to happen? Assuming he advances and fights one of the better middleweights in the world, what's going to happen when he gets hit on the chin? You know, we think about that, but I can tell you this, having spent the last couple of hours with him during our fighter meeting, he's not thinking that way. And in his mind, I guess it takes some rationalization, and in his mind, the rationalization is that I got lazy, I stopped working,
I didn't make weight properly. The fact that he's coming back at 160, says a lot. The fact that he went back with Pat Burns says a lot, his former trainer. And I'll tell you, facially, I barely... I really did. He looked so different. So all the plays, all the things are in place to suggest a change for the better. But the bottom line is, he has to show us that he can take a punch. We're not going to probably see that tomorrow because of the level of opposition. Down the road, though, we will find that out. And he'll find that out. And I don't think he can tell us for sure with certainty the answer to that question.
Now, Steve, how did you get involved in boxing in the first place?
How did I get involved?
Right.
Well, I graduated college with a journalism degree, and I wanted to get any job I could in journalism. And I applied to about 150 newspapers for a job, and I got about 150 rejections. So the next stop was magazines, and I ended up getting a job as a copy editor with London Publishing, which put out boxing and wrestling magazines. And that was 33 years ago. And I got a little taste of boxing. I've loved it, and I've done nothing but boxing ever since.
I've been a subscriber of Ring Magazine, you know, since I graduated college in 1998. Also a fellow journalist right here. And so I remember reading a lot of your you know, articles. I remember you and Jeff Ryan used to break down prospects or break down fights coming up, and you guys would almost like debate each other, which used to be one of my favorite segments in the magazine. I've been reading Ring, KO. There's another one that's slipping my mind right now. I got my first boxing magazine in 1988 when they were about they were profiling the 88 Olympic team. The guys going to Seoul, Roy Jones, Riddick Bowe, Michael Carvajal, Ray Mercer, I was hooked. And then I made 5 subscriptions to college. I was like, okay, now I'm out of college. I don't have to worry about, you know, not being home and then reading it when I get home 2 months later. I said, I can just, you know, now I can subscribe. And basically what I do with my involvement in boxing, I fought in the amateurs for a number of years. I trained guys. I trained in the South Philly gym with some guys that have gone on the world title shots. And was a major. I used to, at my college university, Lock Haven, I was on the box team. I used to be in charge of covering my own fights, which was interesting when I had to interview myself and get quotes. So I would sit in one chair and say, man, what did you think about that fight? It was kind of tough, and you're going out to Reno for the big East-West Classic. What are your thoughts on it? I would get up, and I would sit in the other chair, and I would say something along the lines, well, you know, this is an opportunity I've been waiting on for a long time. I didn't get to make the card last year because couldn't be very excited for this. And then I had got away from the journalism, you know, part for a while I was, you know, working at a job, you know, just trying to make ends meet. Bump into, actually I get an article from Iceman John Scully about 4 years ago that a guy by the name of Rich Bergeron wrote about him. I said, Rich Bergeron? I said, I was supposed to fight a guy in the amateurs in the national championship in 1998 by the name of Rich Bergeron from VMI. And I said, John, how do you know this guy? I was going to fight a guy with that name. He's like, I barely know him, but here, I'll send him an email. I get an email an hour later. What, you want to fight me? I'm like, yeah, bring it on. I want to beat you in 98. I'll beat you now. And Rich and I said a joke, and he goes, so you're a journalism major. I see it on your MySpace page. I said, yeah. You want to write for some boxing website? I'm like, absolutely. I said, I go to fights all the time anyway. I go to the Blue Horizon. I go down to the New I'll bring a pen and paper and write an article. Sounds fun to me. Lo and behold, that's where I'm here.
There you go. But we all, you know, those of us lucky enough to work in boxing, we all get there one way or the other. The stories are usually never the same. You know, everybody gets there in a different way. But if you told me 33 years ago when I was 21 years old that I'd be making my living in boxing journalism for 33 years, I would have said, you're crazy, what are you smoking, you know. So, but I can tell you this, and I think you can appreciate this as a lover of boxing. I've never been bored a day in my life, and, you know, doing magazines and now TV, it's very different, and it's kept me very, very hungry and motivated and excited. So I have no complaints. I love what I do.
Oh, absolutely.
absolutely. And like I said, I remember following a lot of your articles in the magazines, and then I see you on TV. And, you know, I like Charles. I thought you guys made a great team out there. Because you guys are both very easy to listen to. You never really talk down to the audience. And you help in, like, now for me, it's different because I know the sport very well. But I know guys that are not as, you know, fluid in the sport. You know, they're casual fans. And they would watch, you know, the Showbox series. And everybody I talked to, you know, came back with a very positive impression because you guys were very welcoming to the fans and you helped, you know, explain it without talking down to people.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. It was such a pleasure to work with Nick because he had such a passion for boxing and he was such a professional as an announcer. You know, I mean, he was established long before Showbox. But I think when it comes to television, and it's really no different from writing, you are what you are. You know, you can't fake it. If you fake it, you fake personality, your sense of fakehood, or you fake anything, you're going to get eventually. So you know what? You know, I do what I do, and if people like it, great. If people don't like it, that's fine, too.
And what would you say what you enjoy most about the work that you do, Steve?
What do I enjoy most about? You sound a little choppy there. I can't hear you well.
Yeah, what do you enjoy most about the work that you do, writing and, you know, commentating on boxing?
Oh, well, what I love most about doing television is the fact that it's live. You know, to me, that's very, very exciting. I mean, you just can't replace that with anything else. You know, if I sit at the keyboard and I write an article, well, in a half hour, if I don't like what I wrote, you know, I change it and I make it better. In television, the pressure there, because it's live, but you don't get a chance to say what you want to say, make the observations you want to make. The first exists, right? I kind of like her. And the fact that it's live and you don't know what's going to happen, you know, that's the thing about live television. You never know. I mean, four, five, six shows in a row can go by with everything going smoothly. Then you can get one where things don't go smoothly. And things go crazy, and the fighters go crazy, and you get a controversy. The boxing's full of that. And that's what keeps it fresh and exciting.
I think, and mainly I'm bringing this up because we interviewed the one participant a couple of weeks ago. To my knowledge, boxing is the only sport to have a guy parachute into the ring in a live fight.
Yes, I was not there that night. I wish I was. I was watching on TV. But that's an example of the type of stuff. I mean, you know, the Riddick Bowens did a lot of fight at the Garden where a riot breaks out. You know, even something like on Showbox when we had the Andrade Lucien Boutte fight, the first fight in Montreal, when Boutte got knocked down and virtually left into the fight. All the controversy with that. I mean, that stuff you can't make that stuff up. And to react to it on television is very exciting. And you know, knowing you're making the first impression in the viewer's consciousness is a lot of fun.
Now, what do you think about the strength of the sport of boxing as far as, you know, there's a lot of experts out there trying to say that it's dying and, you know, the fact that the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight isn't made yet, people are complaining. What do you think about those naysayers that say it has no hope?
Well, in a sense, I'm one of the naysayers. You know, what the positive that the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight would bring to the sport of boxing, unbelievable. The fact that it hasn't happened to me is very damaging to the sport. You know, boxing, unfortunately, is the type of sport that shoots itself in the foot quite a bit. It doesn't have the structure, it doesn't have the PR, it doesn't have the major sport, and that has to haunt us. And the shame of it all is that there's nothing better than a good fight. But we don't always see it because so much else goes on around it that hurts the sport and that hurts the fan base.
Two guys that I always reference when talking about Mayweather and Pacquiao. Growing up when I was a young kid, I watched a lot of the network TV fights with my dad. Right now, I think the most important thing to Mayweather is his undefeated record. And I think with Pacquiao, he is like an icon in his home country. They both have a tremendous amount of risk in taking this fight. They both have a tremendous amount of reward, but I think to them, the risk outweighs the reward. If they don't fight, and Mayweather can retire undefeated, say I'm the greatest ever, nobody ever beats him, Pacquiao can still be in his home country, was referenced back in 1981, both guys by the name of Gregory Leonard and Thomas Hearns. They had tremendous amount of risk fighting each other, but they were both willing to take that risk for the ultimate reward.
Yeah, well, I agree 100% with you. What I don't agree with, though, is if you're going to be a great fighter, and I think Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao are great fighters, the way great fighters think, they don't worry about losing. They don't think about this guy might beat me. They don't say to themselves, or Mayweather doesn't say to himself, well, I have an undefeated record, and I might lose that record against Manny. Because you know what? If he's still worried about his legacy and what an undefeated record means, he will fight Manny, because if he doesn't fight Manny, that's one of the first things people will remember when they look at Floyd Mayweather's career. They're not going to look at the fact that he won titles at multiple divisions. They're not going to look at the fact that he beat this guy, he beat De La Hoya, he beat this guy. They're going to look at the fact that he never fought Manny Pacquiao. So the idea of Pacquiao is hesitant to fight him. I don't buy that. I mean, that's not a great fight to think.
As far as the rest of the field out there, what would you say was the best fight you saw this year and of all time?
Well, the best fight I saw this year, probably in person, was Steve and Burgo. I mean, the fifth round, that was awesome. It was brutal, and they were fighting at an incredible intensity. As far as the best fight I ever saw, I go back over 30 years. To Aaron Fire Electric Sequoia, the first fight, that in the Orange Bowl of Miami. That was absolutely amazing, and that's still the best fight I've ever been in.
And what was so exciting about that for you?
Oh, that was good. First of all, the stakes were tremendous. Aguero was trying to become the first fighter in history to win titles in four different ways. Aguero was the big favorite. So the underdog won. The pace of the fight was incredible. The way they took each other's punches was incredible. And then it had a very, very violent and conclusive ending. So you put all that together, and it was just an amazing fight.
As far as Showtime, working for them, what's that like considering that they've taken an interest in mixed martial arts as well as boxing, and they have such a storied history with the boxing?
Well, I love working at Showtime. It's great work. The mixed martial arts stuff, Showtime has invested very heavily into that and probably will continue to do so. It's not my cup of tea. I don't really love it, and I think it's a generational thing. It seems like, for me, from what I can tell, most people about 45 and over aren't too big on mixed martial arts, and most people 45 and under seem to like it. So that's just a generation thing. It's important to cover, and it seems to be growing, and boxing can learn a little bit from MMA in terms of how the fights are presented, to attract the young demographic. So there's a lot of positives. It's just, it's pretty tough. It's just not something that I ever really got into. And I tried, but it doesn't really do it for me.
I kind of reluctantly had to embrace it, being the editor of Fight News Unlimited. And once I did watch enough of it, I kind of started watching it more than boxing. But I've never let go of my love for boxing because I used to box myself. So it's kind of hard to shake. But for some reason, I can't sit down for long periods of time and watch most boxing matches these days. Some, because of the people who are fighting, I will. But I don't know. It's just like, it seems like it's one way or the other for most people.
And I'm kind of the opposite. I'm a very old school guy. I am an old school 35-year-old. I remember watching a lot of fights with my dad growing up. I'm a Philadelphia guy. So I remember, my dad was a big fan of Masih Saad Muhammad back in the late 70s, early 80s. I met Matthew a number of years ago. He actually was a friend of my trainer, so he used to come down to my gym and watch me work out, which is kind of cool. But
cool.
Obviously, you had the you know, Smoking Joe Frazier was pretty much retired, but I grew up, you know, idolizing him. My great uncle, who has long passed away, was at the first Marciano Walcott fight in Philadelphia, and the award was given to me at one of my amateur fights back in 97.
Our show system keeps disconnecting.
Hello?
Randomly.
Hello, Steve, you still there?
Still here, yeah. I think we got it disconnected by the operator.
Yeah,
it was into our host.
I'm monitoring it now because it happened earlier for a couple minutes. It's something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess we're wrapping it up anyway. But
Well, what I was saying was I'm very old school. When I was trained in a very old school style in an old school gym. You know, it looked like a gym right out of Rocky. So when I watch boxing matches now, it's like I sit there and I look for the little things. Like, a friend of mine looks him over. Oh, this fight's not exciting. So what are you talking about? I look at the way he's setting up his right hand. I'm like, and I make them see the things that I see. I can't get into mixed martial arts. You know, I'll watch a fight here and there, but maybe Brock Lesnar fighting or, you know, Anderson Silva. I'll watch one or two fights, but I can't get into it. I'm a guy, like, I like setting things up and watching how a boxing match unfolds to a fast food. You know, you go to McDonald's, you get your burger comes out in 2 minutes, you eat it. There's no real nutrition to it, but it tastes pretty good, and you get it real fast. For a lot of people, people don't have the patience or the appreciation for a good filet mignon.
We call it totally.
That's what boxing is to me.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I got to get moving. I got to run to dinner, but I enjoyed talking to you. It's always great to talk to true boxing fans, which you guys are.
Steve, it's been a pleasure.
All right, you take care and have a great new year.
You too.
You too.
Thanks a lot.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. And, Rich, I'll be right back, okay? I'll be right with you.
All right, so that's Steve Farhood from Showtime. Sorry for everybody listening. We had technical difficulties. We had a couple disconnections. I'm not sure how long the first one was, but the last one was only a minute or so. Got it under control. We're on the broadcast now. I did have a couple more stories to briefly touch on before we play the conference call from that Showbox card that's coming up tomorrow night. Let me just get to the file here. We'll get into that. One thing we didn't talk about, we didn't get a chance to talk about yet with Steve or otherwise, is the big news this week that Floyd Mayweather Jr. was sentenced to 90 days in jail for the incident with his ex-girlfriend. Apparently it was all fueled over a situation with her seeing another guy and went into the house to talk to her. And took her cell phones and the kids' cell phones and threatened the kids. Two of the kids that they had together were there in the room. One of them hopped over the back fence and got security. And there was some pushing and shoving. I don't know if there was any actual brutal punches thrown or anything like that, but I know there was some physical contact. And so he was facing 34 years in jail. And sounds like he got a real sweetheart deal. He had to pay a couple thousand in fines, and he has to do some community service, and he gets 90 days in jail with 90 days suspended. And that's going to start in January, so it's actually kind of impacted the whole discussion of whether we are going to have a Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather fight, especially when it comes to the May 5th date that Mayweather's penciled in for next year. A lot of people are saying that because of that 90-day sentence, even if he gets off for good behavior early, it's going to make a fight with Pacquiao impossible on that date. But as many articles that are saying that, that are out there, there's also a good amount of people saying, well, that doesn't affect the negotiations at all. There's still going to be a fight. There never was going to be a fight on May 5th between the two of them, because if there was going to be a fight, they would have picked the date mutually. The Pacquiao camp is not just going to jump in on a date already picked. So the fight is and always was going to happen in November of next year, is what a lot of experts are out there saying. So I tend to agree that November sounds like a better time. Pacquiao is used to fighting in November. I think the last 3 years he's fought. Yeah, so it does make a lot of sense. I have said time and again on this show that the May 5th date is more suited to Mexican or Hispanic heritage type of fighters. So I think that's what you're going
to say. What?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. You know, whoever he fights, it's obviously not going to be somebody that he thinks is going to have a real good chance to beat him. So it probably would not jeopardize a fight with Pacquiao. And it actually sounds like Bob Arum is aiming for a fight with Timothy Bradley, or a fourth fight with Marquez for spring, and that's been talked about a lot, so it does make sense that they would put it off until the end. And I've written articles myself saying that it's got to happen in 2012 if it's ever going to happen at all, so we'll see if that holds true, but that's the news there. The plea agreement that Floyd put out there also is inclusive of allegations of assault against a security guard relating to the parking issues on Mayweather's property there in Vegas too. So apparently that deal was struck too to avoid charges on that. And he's not going to do any jail time for that, but he will have to pay some extra cash, which is not going to affect his bottom line if he's burning $100 bills on TV. Not gonna impact his lifestyle at all, I don't think. But the 90 days in jail, I mean, interesting to see. I mean, obviously, he brings a lot of the city of Las Vegas through his fights, and he knows a lot of people in the area, and I put it past him to bribe guards, special treatment. So it's probably not going to be the kind of stint that a normal guy would face. But it's definitely going to be a cramp in his style to have to be confined to one space and not have video cameras around him wherever he goes. But I'm glad that he did finally run up against a brick wall in that case, and that he will have to do some jail time. Probably might not change his whole attitude on things, and not going to humble him as much as it probably should, and as much as it would have if he'd been given a year or two. But it's definitely going to make him behave in that way. And the community service too. He's going to be doing a lot of that this coming year, because he's got to do some for a civil case involving some walkout music that he never paid for, some other stuff that he's dealing with. So we didn't get to talk about that subject last week because we weren't on, but it broke last Wednesday, I think. In the main news here, quickly, we got a story about Sean Sherk. He was detained in the United Kingdom. They mistook him for a crime warlord. He was touring the UK as part of an MMA seminar tour, and they accidentally arrested him. Find him because he's connected to a well-known crime boss. The vehicle he was riding in was stopped at a roadblock, and after a small misunderstanding, beam gun-toting bodies descended upon Church and forcefully removed him from the car. know if you hear that, but it's my rooster in the background. You hear that? Rooster likes the story. There he goes. They thought the car was loaded with illegal firearms. And the police in London are notorious for not being armed, so it must have really been a sight to see guys with machine guns acting police officers. They had the vehicle on their database as being linked to a local man who they believed to be a key gangland figure. And Sherk thought the car was just being subjected to a routine stop until it turned out to involve several carloads of police officers carrying automatic weapons. And sat in his passenger seat because he had not understood an instruction to exit the vehicle. Sherk was dragged out by 10 officers. They cuffed his hands behind his back and pulled him away where he was none too gently searched before being dumped on the floor. And they found no weapons in the car. He was sent on his way with nothing more than a nice foreign relations story. But Sherk supposedly took the blunder in good spirits and said that despite the widespread village constable reputation that UK police have, the officers were much more aggressive and heavy-handed than what he had ever experienced in the U.S. So, I guess Sean Sherk looks for... I guess there wasn't anything to do with this. When they pulled him out of the car, they must have realized this is a tough-looking guy. Kind of fit the description of the guy, even though he's an organized fighter. Another quick boxing story. The IBF rejected Amir Khan of the decision of his controversial fight with Anthony Peterson. We could get a chance to ask Steve about that fight, what he thought about that one. But we didn't. Anyway, that's another story that came through this week. Edwin Rodriguez, former guest, we just had on. Moving up in the world. He's going to be fighting a guy, named his next opponent, Argentine fighter No Gonzalez, who's 28-1 with 20 knockouts, and he'll be fighting on St. Patrick's Day at New York's Madison Square Garden. A nice test for him. They're still in negotiations on what the TV deal is going to involve, but it's definitely going to be televised because the promoter, Rodriguez's manager, Larry Army Jr., said we won't take that kind of risk without television money. But that about exhausts my collection of news. Unless you have anything else, Tony, we're going to sign off on the show by playing the show buttons call from a couple days ago. We'll get to ask a few questions of Andre Durrell and Jermaine Taylor. All right. So until next week, we thank you for stopping by.
Next week or next year.
Till next year, yes.
Till next year.
And happy day for everybody. I hope everybody had a great Christmas. And tomorrow night, you're going to have Christmas all over again. Not Showbox or... UFC card, Lesnar versus Overeem.
You know what? I'll tell you something right now, man. You know it's in 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks. What is in 2 weeks?
My 4-year anniversary.
Oh.
I haven't missed a show in 4 years.
Nice.
The Iron Man. I'm like Cal Ripken.
Yeah, we put the pedal to the metal. Don't mess around.
Well, there we go.
Like I said earlier, even when I try not to have guests, we have guests. We're getting
that's
right.
Right.
But, recording here for the conference call is about 50 minutes, 54 minutes, so it's probably going to be just in time here to wrap up the show.
That'll take you right to the end, then.
Yep. And
everybody, all the listeners there, have a happy and safe New Year's, and we'll be back next year. This Renato is out.
Yeah. And don't forget to check out fcfighter.com tomorrow. They're going to have my big story about science. And check out our website. We're going to have this full conference call available for later listening, only for our subscribers. If you're going to be a subscriber. So check that out tomorrow. We'll have some new stuff on the blog. And don't forget to visit our sponsors, Cocaine Energy Drink, MarijuanaMuscle.com, and, of course, ZionShop.com, our friends over there with the gear supplements. And that's it. So we're gonna play this interview conference call. Enjoy.
Let me know what kind of things that I stand on in the sport of boxing. I'm here to support the team on that ride. You know, so when I get back in the ring, I believe that, you know, the world would know it as well as me that, you know, I can land that car.
And for most part of the stress, I don't have some fights and I'll be better.
Crotch, who you had a very close fight with,
yeah.
And Mike Ward, who you were supposed to fight against in the third stage, go through and get into the position where they were. Watch other guys come in, like, you know, Alan Green after Taylor dropped out, and then to watch other fighters take other fighters' places, and if you're sitting outside on top of victory, can't fight. What was the frustration like?
The frustration was more like,
Regardless. I just looked at the series up. California, that's near Palm Springs, California. For those who don't know,
I had to beg him. You know, like I had him begging. Kind of on top.
Okay, thank you very much, man. I wish you good luck on Friday.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
I got a question for everybody. A lot of people say that boxing is dead. What can you all do individually to change that perception, do you think? Let's answer first. What do you think you guys can do individually to put some spark back into the sport?
I'm not sure if anyone's in the recent
know, you get a star on nine, you know, and I'll be playing at home, but I wish him the best, man. But, you know, it's hard out here, man. I wish him the best. And one more question, Jermaine, regarding your comeback, are you returning to Boston to compete or to contend? I'm returning to Boston to be number one. Whichever one that is, you take it away. But I'm returning to Boston to be number one and to hold those belts up in there again. And it's a no why I'm holding it, you know? Thank you very much, Jermaine. It's a no on Friday. Thank you so much.
Our last question comes from the line of Gary Perfield with theboxingtribune.com.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Actually, my first question is for Lou. Lou, when you decided to make the decision to not manage Tribune anymore, the session and the fact that you were giving up, you know, 2 days to do the right thing, do this more was best for the player. Touched on one of your opening statement, but how far was it to then come back knowing that you made a strong moral decision and now decide that you do want to throw back your terrain?
And to be honest with you, it wasn't a hard moral decision because, I had to be convinced that the last year, and it was a long process of conversations, frankly, between myself and Al Herman, and, you know, knowing that Jermaine had been going to his endocrinologist, his endocrinologist and cardiologist in Arkansas, and began a process of checking his own health and well-being. And when it became clear that that was going to extend to places like the Cleveland Clinic and the Mayo Clinic, and that I received myself a copy of all the medical data in Germany, and the from Germany, when it was received to Nevada State Athletic Commission and to clinicians. And to me, medical testing was done at the Wazoo this time, and he was, I had a conversation directly with one of the cardiologists in the world. Here's the exact conversation, and actually I can say it because I believe this came out in testimony before the Nevada Commission. And I asked the doctor, if Jermaine Taylor was your own kid, would you let him fight? And what the doctor said is, yeah, I wouldn't let him fight, and I wouldn't let my own kid fight under any circumstances. But if what you're asking me is Jermaine Taylor any different than any other fighter? Like, is there any other exception of risk? Is there any more, you know, unnecessary, you know, risk than any other fighter? Then I can't tell you that. I can't tell you that. So, and based upon that, the man has a right to be the restroom is already demanded. Like you said, he was a fighter. Fighters fight. And if I believed he was in danger by virtue of getting back into the ring, believe me, I mean, when at the point I pulled away, I saw like shitloads of money in the Super 6 portal, which you made this day into to the end. And frankly, he wouldn't be out there in Germany if the German referees were at the way they were and you had to get out there around the top of his head to get, you know, any recognition. But he was forced to fight a certain fight, but he got caught in that shit.
And the best of food matters in the world, or the worst